Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 217 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks. Oh, my God. I say the same exact thing. Same exact opening. Every single time. How do you realize that it's not the same episodes over and over again? I don't know, folks. It's not going to change anytime soon. Big change is coming up, though. Let me tell you. We'll get into that in just a moment. Big show today. Big show this week, folks. Lou Barlow of the band Sebado and the guy responsible for this bass line. That bass line right there. And Dinosaur Jr. Lou Barlow, man, joining us here on the Air Raid Podcast. I had the pleasure and the honor of going down to the green room at a local club here in Seattle on Capitol Hill called Numo's. And I got to chat with Lou for, 35, 40 minutes in the green room. And it was fantastic. It was spectacular. He was very, very nice. I was super, super nervous. I was nervous to the point, I know I've said many times on this show that I no longer get nervous. That's a lie. That's a bold-faced lie. I am lying to you. I still get nervous. I get more anxious than I do nervous, I think. But I was frickin' nervous for this one, to the point where my wife was like watching me, like, you know, in the hours leading up to the interview, I was like walking, pacing around the house, just cleaning everything, being kind of like aggravated and putting things away and slamming doors and stuff, you know, just being kind of a jerk. And she goes, "Man, I haven't seen you like this in a long time before an interview." Keyword, before an interview. What's going on? And I said, I'm so nervous. I'm so anxious. I need to be doing something with my hands right now to like keep me from just, you know, driving at 90 miles per hour or something, you know, around in circles. So I got to the point where I was like, I'm going to have to take a pill for this, man. I'm going to have to take a beta blocker just to go and talk with somebody. And so that's what I did. And I calmed right down, and we had a fantastic chat. So that's good. Drugs, kids. They're not just for getting high. They're for allowing you to calm down and talk like a human in public settings. There you go. Or on a recording. It's a great conversation, though. And like I said, I mean, I've been a huge fan of Sebado ever since my teenage years. Come on, with a list like this, guys. Sebado 3. What about Bake Sale? Weed Foresten. What else? Harmacy, The Sebado, Defend Yourself, which is their new album. We're going to be featuring music off of one of my favorites, Bake Sale, and then later on in the episode, Defend Yourself. So both amazing, amazing albums. I bought two of the albums at the show. Yeah, that's right. Bought two of the albums. I was that guy. I bought the vinyl for Bake Sale, which I've never owned. So that was rad. It's like the remastered edition from Sub Pop, which you can go to subpop.com, Sub Pop Records, and purchase that album. Also comes with a digital download, so that's pretty rad. Right? Yeah. And then I bought the new album, which I didn't own on disc yet. And Defend Yourself. It's so good. It's so good. Return to form for Sebado, man. It had been a long time since it came out with something. I'm just such a huge fan, and it was so great to talk with Lou. One of my indie rock heroes, man. One of my indie rock heroes. So, let's get into this. We got an email from a listener. Let's see, concerning episode 215, which I'd like to share with you. And this is kind of like it's a correction, okay? It's a correction. And the email reads, "Hi, Aaron. I love the show. Been listening for some time now. As I'm sure you have heard, there are times when your facts are wrong during the introductions to your episodes, which I forgive, because, let's face it, we are all human." Oh, thank you. "But this one, I just had to voice a correction. Uh-oh. In episode 215, you featured music by the band The Laws, of which I am a huge fan, partly because I was raised in their hometown of Liverpool, England. I don't know if you guys remember 215 with Ian Carmel, episode 215, but I stated that The Laws were from San Francisco, which is not right." Apparently. Listener Derek goes on, "You stated in the episode that you believe they were from San Francisco. This, of course, could not be further from the truth. Sorry to shoot across your bow. Still love the show and will continue to let all the other fact-checking lie squarely on the keys of your other listeners. Derek in Enfield, England." Thank you so much, Derek. Thank you for that correction. The instant that came out of my mouth, I knew it was wrong, but I was in kind of a hurry, so I didn't change it. So I apologize for that. I knew they were from. I knew that. I knew they were from somewhere in England or the UK. But for some reason, I was thinking, I had in my head, because So I Married an Axe Murderer was what kind of shot them into stardom here in the States with what's that? There She Goes, with that song There She Goes, right? And then that song was everywhere after that movie, and I remember that movie taking place in San Francisco, so I think I got my wires crossed on that. I knew they were from England. Why did I say San Francisco? Because of the movie. Yeah. Because of pop culture. That's why. Okay. What else, folks? Oh, hey, I've been listening to this new amazing podcast called The Gist, which is impeccably produced and is just super wonderful and super informative as well. And I urge you guys to go and check it out, The Gist with Mike Pesca. Now, he's doing something right now, which we have done in the past, but he's doing it much more, he's doing it in a much more interesting and more thoughtful way, which is he is doing a, what's the word for it? A pledge drive, but it doesn't entail giving money to the show. It entails pledging that you will go out and subscribe, physically subscribe your friend, your daughters, your sons, your grandmas, your aunts, your uncles to the show, The Gist. Now, we have on this show, Air Raid, we have in the past asked you guys to go and do the same thing. But it struck me that Mike Pesca is doing such a wonderful job, and he's so much smarter than me, that he came up with such a better idea. And that is the pledge drive, right? So this is what we're going to do as well. We want you guys to pledge that you will go out and subscribe a friend, at least tell them about the Air Raid podcast, and so we can get some more listeners in here. Because folks, this all relies squarely on your shoulders. Keeping this show together, keeping it running, relies on you to be downloading the show and listening to it, for that matter. Because we have to go back to advertisers with these numbers and to get money to help keep the lights on. And so that's what we need to do. Pledge. Pledge to us. Pledge to the Air Raid podcast that you will subscribe. Two of your friends. That's it. We've all got two friends. Come on. Subscribe your two friends to the show and tell them that it is awesome. Okay? There you go. There's no prizes. There's no tote bags. Nothing like that. You don't get a fanny pack. But you do get the knowledge that you helped the Air Raid podcast out, and we love you for it. That's truth, guys. No fact-checking needed in that one, right? Okay. Okay. Let's get to it, shall we? Oh, and by the way, if you want to email us, aaron@air-raid.net, you can also go to our website, www.air-raid.net, and click on the Archives tab and listen to all 215 episodes for free right there at the website. Only the most recent 20 are available on iTunes, and they're all available at our website. So go and check it out. People like Eddie Pepitone, Jesse Thorne, Mike Birbiglia. How about Pete Holmes or Duncan Trussell? Or what's another one? Hari Kondabolu, where he yells at me. He yells at me in that episode, you guys. It's quite entertaining. Also, Death Cab for Cutie, Presidents of the United States of America, Mudhoney, the Melvins. It's all there. It's all there. Macklemore? Yeah, that's right. That guy. Macklemore. It's all there at www.air-raid.net. Okay, let's get to it, shall we? All right, this first song is from the album Bake Sale, which came out in 1994. One of my favorite albums of all time. I remember just driving late at night, listening to this album with a broken heart, and this thing just fucking helped me through some shit. Sebado. Sebado, man. This song's called Skull. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Lou Barlow. All right. Be back in a moment, folks. And the charm in the way you hide. Gently take my skull for a ride. And I don't know. But I know what I would like you to be. One night stand under stone persuasion, but a joy that I can't hide. Gently take my skull for a ride. Buzz Osborne of the Melvins, yep. And I was extremely nervous, and because he's an odd fella, and
he's pretty nice though.
He is a very nice guy, very nice guy.
Yeah.
But it was kind of hard to talk to him, and I came down here and I'm just sweating bullets. For some reason, it is so hot in the basement.
Dripping,
just not
it
great.
It is hot down here.
Yeah, yeah. So you're sick, man. I'm really sorry to hear that. It's got to be kind of hard to tour like that.
Yeah. I mean, but it's pretty typical, you know.
Is it?
Yeah. I mean, it's. Yeah, I get sick. I don't get sick a lot on tour, but I get sick.
Yeah.
I tour a lot, so I get sick.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Meet a lot of people. You're shaking a lot of hands.
Yeah.
People cough on you. And then the inevitable happens.
Yeah.
And you're a father as well, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. How old are your kids?
4 and 9.
Oh, my God. How's that going?
Pretty good.
I mean,
I divorced their mom, but I recently decided that we were all moving back to Massachusetts, where my family lives and where my ex-wife's family lives. And, so I moved them all out there.
Yeah. And your ex-wife was cool with that?
Kinda. It actually only took about 10 minutes to convince her, but I was also, you know, we're doing this because I can't keep you in L.A. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Too expensive.
Yeah, and we got to go. You know, it's like you need to go where we're going to get more support. And
sure.
And yeah. So,
yeah.
So
yeah.
They went out there for the beginning of the school year, and I've just started touring. So I'm going to move out there, and once I'm done with this sort of round of touring, I'm going to pack up my minivan and drive across country and join them in Massachusetts.
Right on. You don't seem like you don't seem like an LA kind of guy. What was it about LA that made you want to move there?
Well, to be perfectly honest, it was my wife's idea.
Oh, really?
Now ex-wife.
Right. Yeah.
But I mean, I really. L.A. kind of freaked me out at first, but I grew to really like it, and I mm-hmm. still do. And I mean, I'm a supporter.
Sure,
I'm a fan.
So. I was born and raised here in Washington, mm-hmm. in a small town across the water from Seattle,
mm-hmm.
and so even moving to Seattle was like a huge jump for me.
Yeah,
like everything's so much bigger.
Yeah.
And faster and right. scary. And
well, I had moved from Western Massachusetts, which probably could be maybe something like moving from an island. And
sure.
To Boston, and then from Boston to LA.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, that's cool, man. Well, I'm happy that you're going back home.
You know, I think it was the right decision. My girlfriend and I kind of hatched it together, and the kids seem to be flourishing, and it's kind of my family kind of needs me right now too. So
that's good. Yeah. That's good. Excellent, man. Good to hear. Yeah, I'm. I don't know what you're dealing with on the kid front, but I've got a 3-year-old and a 5-month-old.
Whoa.
And we are doing like meltdown central. Like, yeah. Is this a thing that's normal? Because my 3-year-old is like, she'll wake up super cranky and just fucking go for it. Like, she will scream and yell.
They're all different, man. I can't tell you. It's crazy. They're all totally the.
Oh well, sure, yeah.
They're all different.
But was that something that you had to deal with as well?
I don't know. You know, my experience with my kids is I'm not to say what you're complaining on anyway. I don't think you are.
Yeah.
I mean, you're saying meltdown. I mean, I don't remember meltdowns characterizing either of my child's sort of early years. You know, I don't. You know, my daughter had a lot of anxiety issues, you know,
mm-hmm.
that kind of developed when she was around 5 or 6.
Your daughter's your oldest?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was the kind of big challenge, you know, and I think it had a lot to do with our domestic situation and but I really worked on that, you know. And
yeah, yeah.
She seems to be doing pretty well. Anyway, I'm sorry.
It's kind of a...
I don't know. Kids are, it's such an amazing adventure.
It is.
You know, and I found. I mean, I guess since I kind of changed my life, and you know, and so now when I have my kids, I take them in a totally different context, and it's incredible. You know.
Yeah, yeah. I can only imagine like what it's like, you know, no longer being there 24/7.
Well, I wasn't anyway. See, that's the thing.
Well, sure. Okay.
I was touring so much.
Yeah.
I wasn't anyway, but when I was home, it was like I had grown to really feel very strongly that something needed to change in like a very big way. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
For the well-being of my children, and also for my own, you know, esteem.
Yeah.
Sanity.
Yeah. Right.
Health. You know, and you know it's. And it was hardly a surprise, really. I
mean, mm-hmm.
But I.
Are you talking the divorce?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
For me, anyway.
Sure.
So, I don't know. I mean, I could go on forever, but the big change is now it's sort of evolved into this where everybody's going back, which is actually uh-huh. really what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I wanted to be somewhere where my children had family around them, and I wanted my family to experience my children, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, it's cliche, but, you know, life is really short.
Yeah.
Days go by, and then it's done, you know.
Right, right. So. Well, and I think in your line of business, too, you've seen a lot of people end soon.
Sort of, I guess.
You know, or like, not soon is a bad word, but, you know, things have ended for some people in the rock and roll industry a little bit too quickly, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've seen that.
A little bit.
Yeah. Did that play into it at all? Like, how you
no,
view
actually,
your life
with
your family?
I just view it, like, in general in life. I mean, I just think people... I think you have to really take... You really have to do what you need to do in your life. You know?
Sure.
If you can't,
sure.
If you keep putting it off, it you can't... I guess for me, I kept... You know, I had an idea of what I wanted to do, and I kept postponing that idea or trying to work the situation I was in into that idea, and then eventually I was like, I can't do this. You know, I can't make this situation into something that is going to work for me and make me feel like I'm doing the best for my children,
right?
Make me feel like I'm doing the best for my family, and even, you know, doing the best for my ex-wife. You know, I mean, I just
sure.
I was like, this has got to change, and so, you know, that's, and the change came,
yeah,
know, in the
yeah.
form of, you know, me falling in love with another woman who was a very close friend of mine, so.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's heavy, man.
Yeah. But it's heavy. Typical. Yeah, it's typical stuff. It's real,
sure.
It's real normal stuff.
Well, it seems like in your last album that came out in 2013, Defend Yourself, which is freaking fantastic, by the way.
You like it?
Yeah, I
cool.
do. I love it.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of it.
That's really cool.
and it seems like a lot of the songs on there, the lyrical content has a lot of personal strife in
yeah.
a lot of the stuff that you're singing about. And it sounded like, because I listened to your interview with Marc Maron. And you went into your divorce a little bit on there,
yeah.
because
it was
like just starting.
Oh God, yeah.
With that, and it like hit it home to me that a lot of what you're singing about in that album is coming from.
Yeah,
turmoil.
I really only finished a lot of those songs once I made the change. You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you ever worry about like putting that personal of a spin on? In your lyrics and stuff? Like, is that ever a thing that you ever thought about?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, but, you know, my ex was pretty... She was so used to it because it was such a big... And she liked... I met her because she liked my music, so... I don't know. I had almost like an anonymous... Like, my music was almost anonymous, you know, like she... Because she didn't really listen too close, and...
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I mean, I could... Yeah, she just didn't listen too close. So, but even, you know, but I mean, I guess for me, I guess when I find a really good song that I think is good, you know, for mm-hmm. myself personally, if it feels good and it flows, and you know, I feel like I make it pretty general, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I hear a lot of other stuff that seems far more specific. I mean, just the sort of, you know, when the sort of 2000s came after, you know, and the sort of those post indie, the initial wave of indie rock, you know, the Sebados and your Pavements, and then sort of
uh-huh.
the things that took over from that, like the Bright Eyes.
Yeah.
And the Death Cab for Cutie, and the, like,
wearing your heart on your sleeve.
That is really personal. That's kind of the kind of stuff that, like, they're recounting very specific details.
Sure, sure.
And I would be like, why? And then when I would hear that stuff, I'd be like, why were people were all over me about like being like, you know, this too. I'm like, this stuff is specific. Like what I was writing was
almost
as general as a country song, in my opinion.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I kind of write to that. I want to write stuff that's
somewhat anonymous.
Yeah, I want to write like a country song, because country songs are terribly personal. I mean, like classic country, you know, 50s, 60s country, that stuff is like just blood spattered all over it. I mean, it's intense stuff, you know. And I mean, I don't know if anyone said like, gee, George, or do you feel strange singing this song? Whatever, you know. I mean, That's what you're supposed to do. You do it because the audience, you do it for the people who listen, because the people who listen, that's, you know, a way, that's like your, for me, I guess it's just, I know what songs do for me, so.
Sure.
So I want to do that for other people.
Yeah. So would you say that, like, being a musician and your music in particular is a very personal experience for you then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, yeah.
So where did all this start for you, man? Like, what was the beginning of music in your life?
Well, I mean, I loved pop radio when I was a kid, you know. Yeah. I grew up in the 70s. And
top 40 kind of stuff?
I love the top 40.
Yeah.
You know, and a friend of mine and I would just sit up, you know, I would stay over at his house on weekends, and we would listen to the entire top 40 and sing along to the songs. And I bought, you know, the 99-cent 7-inch records at Kmart and
yeah.
Caldor's, and, you know, and then I started buying albums, and I really loved Elton John, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's when I started to get into albums, and I bought a Beatles record because I had a guitar teacher who taught me a Beatles song, and so I started listening to the Beatles.
Yeah. Was music a big part of, like, your parents' life as well?
Not really. They loved music, but they didn't, you know, they had like a little, you know, they had the little micro stack of LPs that had the general, like, you could sort of...
Nat King Cole.
You know, Harry Belafonte at Carnegie Hall.
Yeah, yeah.
There's records that everybody bought.
Sure.
And my parents had those records. So they weren't like they loved music and they sang a lot. My dad would make up songs and sing them to us when we were going to bed. And,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, there was a lot of music, but there was no one who was a musician in my immediate family.
Yeah.
So, but then, you know, so I guess I learned how to play guitar, you know, and I had a really cool guitar class in sixth grade where this kind of guy with a feathered, you know, Bruce Jenner haircut and some aviator frames taught the entire, we had a, you know, class of maybe, I don't remember, but maybe 7 or 8 kids, you know, girls and boys.
And this was for school? This was like
for
a
school.
A
like I got
school.
I got out of, I didn't have to go to gym, I could go to guitar class,
oh,
which was
awesome.
Amazing in sixth grade. So
that's amazing, yeah.
And he sat there and he taught us, the entire little group of us, you know, like how to play Dust in the Wind,
uh-huh.
Stairway to Heaven.
That must have been excruciating.
Yeah, but awesome, you know.
Sixth grade class.
I mean, awesome.
Oh, yeah.
And Girl by the Beatles.
Wow.
And some others, I'm sure. But
that's a real classic.
And that's how I learned to do, I learned the sort of rudiments of guitar because I was doing it with other kids, and we did it all together, and it made it really fun.
Yeah.
So that's how, because learning it alone, like going to lessons and then sitting at home and my mom yelling at me to practice, and was not, it didn't really take. But when I got into that class and that guy, it was amazing. And
that's so cool.
And then I was part of almost like a little guitar troupe in the sixth grade. Like we even played, I think maybe the school did a play of like Annie Get Your Gun or something. And we sat and played like little Western guitar songs like boom dee boom dee boom dee boom. And we'd play them together. And that stuff really, I think that really like, that's when it clicked. And that's when I started writing my own little melodies and things. I had to move from Michigan to Massachusetts when I was in, for the seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a pretty big move at that particular age, you know. And Massachusetts was very different than Michigan, you know, like very different socially. So I immediately reverted into music. And I was also obsessed with AM radio and FM radio. And in that area in Massachusetts, there's a lot of colleges.
Mm-hmm.
So while I was channel surfing, you know, just like surfing for stations, you know, left of the dial, because I would just go from one end of the dial to the other and plot out every station that was in there, and I found and I heard Holiday in Cambodia by the Dead Kennedys, and it was probably 1980.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell what is this?
Yeah.
And it just blew my mind. And then and then in just very quick succession, I, you know, it was like the Ramones, and I had a kid up the street who had a Massachusetts was pretty cool because it also had a little bit more of a culture. It was a little more culture, not. It wasn't ethnically diverse, let's say, you know, because it was like I grew up in a much more racially, in Michigan it was more racially balanced. I mean, there was like almost 50-50 in my classes, and I went through a lot of busing and stuff in school to make sure that I experienced that.
Yeah.
But when I got to Massachusetts, it was like, white, but white is what it can be. But then again, there was also like the influence of places like Boston and New York could be felt there.
Sure, sure.
So there were, I could go to the local newsstand and I could find something called the New York Rocker, which was kind of a fanzine that ran out of New York that covered, new music, really new music.
How old are you at this time?
I would have been like 13.
13 years old?
13, yeah. 14.
Okay.
I like to make myself younger every time I tell it, but it's really hard to tell.
I was
13, 14, 15. So
yeah,
I was reading about bands, and then I was also hearing stuff on the college radio that was just astounding, amazing. And thinking about it now, it's like, that's cool. I mean, I got to hear the Gang of Four when it was sort of current, and I was buying Joy Division records when they were current, there was a record store about 17 miles away that sold imports, and I'd save up my newspaper money and I'd, whine at my parents till they'd take me there, but they liked to go there anyway. And the Ramones in particular, I mean, that was as far as guitar playing went. I was like, that's
what you wanted to do.
That sounds incredible. Like, what is that? Like, that's not even anything related to like all of the way that people play guitar or you're told the guitar should be played. And it's just that blur, that white, that just sort of sheen of noise that he produced by the way that he strummed the guitar was really fascinating. Yeah. And I can't take that.
Instead of diving and spinning around.
these hardcore bands popping up all over the country. And, you know, it was very, very fast, sort of in the wake of Black Flag and the Circle Jerks. There was right. all of these regional bands that were playing their version of this kind of new, really kind of interesting, almost like a folk music that really developed, because these songs were all about 30 seconds long.
Yeah, yeah.
Played really fast and screamed, and everyone sounded a little bit different, you know,
yeah.
like, and as you delve into it as a young kid, you know, you can really make all, you can discern all the differences between these things. And the more your ear is trained to it, the more it just this world opens up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just became obsessed with hardcore punk rock and fanzines, and that's how I got to know about cities too. You know, it's like, well, Seattle, that's where the Farts are from. Okay.
The Farts.
The Farts and the Rejectors. That's what they're from here.
I've never even heard of the Farts.
I gotta
check that out.
Pretty interesting. Yeah, because this fucking world stinks, that's their first 7-inch.
Really?
Yeah. World Full of Hate is their first 12-inch.
That sounds amazing.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
But it's like really
yeah.
like real raw, like raw, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a band from Portland called Poison Idea, and I mail ordered their first cassette, and I mail ordered cassettes from bands, and you know, read there was a sort of, there still is, I'm sure it still exists, but Maximum
yeah.
Rock and Roll, you know, had all of, you just read those things and it gave you all the addresses of where you can, and from that I was like, I really want to be in a band.
Yeah,
I want to be
yeah.
in a band. And I met a kid at my school who looked like a member of the Ramones. And I'm like, what are you listening to? And he's like, Black Flag. I'm like, great. Let's eat lunch together.
Let's do this.
Let's eat lunch together. And pretty soon, he and I were like wailing away on bass and guitar while
sure.
a kid around the corner was hitting pots and pans. And then we decided to put an ad in the local record store, the one that sort of where all the kids from all that area came. And that's when Jay Maskus answered our ad and came, his dad drove him down in a station wagon and brought the punkest kid I have ever met
yeah.
in my life. You know, the kid looked the part, had an incredible haircut, practically like suspenders and Doc Martens. You're like, what the fuck? And he had the crazy drum kit, and he could play, like, he totally could play.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he heard Scott and I playing together, he got really excited. He actually was the most excited I've ever seen Jay, actually. It's like, you guys are the fastest band in Massachusetts, he said. And because we were just trying to play as fast as possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when we hooked up. And then Jay brought in his friend to sing. And, you know, there's all kinds of little ins and outs to that story.
Sure, sure.
But that was, you know, that was my first band. And that was my introduction to Jay. And meeting him was like, you know, he was incredibly
yeah.
influential for
Now, when did things kind of slow down, though, like musically?
Slow
you know?
Down?
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, you started out playing this, like, really, you know, punk.
Oh, you mean, like, literally slow
yeah,
down?
Yeah, literally oh, slow yeah. down, like, playing that fast punk. And I totally know what you're saying. When you're a kid, you can kind of hear, if you start out listening to the Dead Kennedys, right, it's
yeah.
a lot of noise,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But the more you listen to it, and this goes with anything, the more you get into something, you can start hearing those intricate melodies that
yeah,
are
totally.
Going on
yeah.
around there and stuff. And
yeah.
so was that something for you guys too? Like you're
oh,
playing
yeah.
this fast rock and then you start finding those intricate melodies and slowing things down? Is that how it progressed?
No.
No?
I mean, we were actually listening. I mean, I was listening to Joy Division before I got into hardcore.
Sure.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? So.
Yeah.
And the hardcore just somehow just took me over for about a year, just like, whoa,
okay.
like brainwashed me, you know?
Right.
And sort of spit me out the other end. And the other end, it was like, you know, that was the beginning of speed metal. So like half the kids that were into hardcore went to speed metal,
right.
like the bass player of
right.
our band, you know, they went to
spending
like,
6 hours a day getting their chops up playing.
Yeah.
Bing
you know,
Malmsteen
totally.
Stuff.
And
yeah.
listening
yeah.
to Anthrax and, you know, and mail ordering those early Metallica, you know,
right.
cassettes and stuff like that. So, but I guess Jay and I both, at that time there was also this, because there was still college radio, and there was actually this sort of rising college rock movement, like REM.
Yeah.
And I heard, you know, Radio Free Europe on commercial radio, and I was like, this song is great.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What is this? You know, like, this sounds awesome. What
yeah.
is this band? And it's like, then okay, buy the first REM record. That's great. What a great record, you know. And then there was a whole slew of bands that were like pretty much like right in, you know, in that REM pocket. And that were like, there was a band from Boston called The Neats. They were this really jangly kind of 60s influenced band that were really unique sounding. They would go really well right now. But like,
sure.
They're actually very, their sound is actually very current to what's going on now.
But so cyclical,
And then in LA there was all these bands like the Dream Syndicate and the Gun Club and then Minnesota and Minneapolis there was the Replacements, and then the Husker Du were kind of like branching out, and then in LA the Minutemen, you know, it's like they were not really a hardcore band ever. You always listen to the Minutemen all the way through hardcore even.
Sure.
But they were different, you know, and the Meat Puppets, they were the craziest hardcore band, and they mutated into a country band.
Yeah.
So there was all of these inspirations going on. I mean, it was like, and then you're a kid, so you're into it, and you're looking for it, you know, and you're finding it. And, you know, and it didn't take a tremendous amount of money to do it, and it didn't take, like, you know, you could do it. And I had, like I said, the resource of, that college radio was incredible to have at my fingertips, you know. So I barely graduated from high school because I was just obsessed with music.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever end up going to college?
No.
No?
I went to a lot of college. I went to colleges.
Played a lot of them.
I partied at colleges. You know, I mean, well, partied. I found my little corner in the kitchen at college parties.
Sure.
And talked to my friends about all the same shit we talked about when we weren't in those corners in those kitchens.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I mean, I drove all around that area just has tons of colleges. So.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And it was, and you know, I was a townie, so I was a townie.
Yeah.
Worked at a nursing home to make money to buy gear, musical gear, and bought a 4-track, started writing songs on ukulele and 4-string guitar and using a lot of open tunings and just strange tunings. And then I'd heard about Sonic Youth. It's kind of funny because, like, I'd heard about Sonic Youth from reading about them, and the idea of Sonic Youth was a huge inspiration on me.
Oh, yeah.
I actually didn't hear them for, like, years after I heard about them. But when I heard them, they were, like, they're one of the few things that when you read about it, you're like, oh, my God, and you hear this thing in your head. One of the few bands that when I heard what was being written about, it actually matched it. Like, it was like, holy Christ, like, Confusion is Sex, like, it just sounds like incredible Martian hardcore, like, just like so exotic and catchy and abrasive, and, you know, I loved it. I loved them.
Yeah, that Daydream Nation blew the fucking lid off of my musical head.
Right.
Like, when that stuff came out, and along with, like, Sebado 3.
Cool.
And then Bake Sale, like, really just fucking opened up a whole different world for me musically.
Cool.
And I thank you for that.
Cool.
But do you, some people have said, and maybe it's just people that I've talked to, they've referred to you as one of the godfathers of the lo-fi movement. Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does that, do you embrace that?
No.
No?
No, I mean, you have to understand, like, I mean, I was buying, the records I was buying were lo-fi.
Sure.
Those were the records that influenced me. I mean, the records that were being released on the Rough Trade label, like, in England, there was an incredibly vital, like, prolific, like, scene of young people who were making their own recordings any way they could make them, starting from, you know, the invention of punk rock. And then, and it mutated, and it wasn't just punk, you know, and it mutated into something that, I guess, you know, what we call post-punk, you know. And there was a record called Wanna Buy a Bridge, which was a compilation of Rough Trade singles.
Okay.
And it was available almost everywhere in the U.S. for some reason. It was like a cutout. You could buy it for like $4. And I bought it, and it totally blew my mind.
Yeah.
And And it had a band called the Young Marble Giants on it. And they were like, I mean, that to me, I'm like, okay. That's to me, it's almost, it's a very much a, when I started doing my little four track stuff, you know, it was all like an, you know, an homage to the Young Marble Giants. And mm-hmm. Even now when I made my solo records in the late 90s, you know, I would make rhythm tracks by sampling Young Marble Giants records because it triggers such a, you know, it triggers like such a warm memory in me, that band in particular. Yeah. They had a record called Colossal Youth, which is gorgeous, you know, it's a gorgeous, it's very spare, very simple, lo-fi record. Not as lo-fi, I guess, as the stuff that I dabbled in, but you know, when Dinosaur Jr. went on tour with Sonic Youth for the first time, I don't remember where we were. It might have been Buffalo, New York. I mean, it's one of these. I have a visual memory of where I was at the time, but Thurston was carrying around a huge boombox, and they were just playing tapes that they had found, you know, bands that they had played with or people had given them, and they put on a tape by Daniel Johnston, and this would be 1986, and it was like, what is that? You know, I mean, it sounded so incredible, you know, and it was, you know, it was a guy recording in his, right onto a, you know, portable tape deck in his parents' basement.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I had been doing, you know, but this was someone who was doing it with unbelievably beautiful songs, you know.
Yeah,
it wasn't just like, you know, it wasn't just like a kid rattling away. It was like, whoa, this is really beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And it really, and it was basically music that is good, is as good as any music that's ever been made. And that was intense for me, you know, like, you just being like, my, you know, you don't, it doesn't, you can make music that will stand the test of time any way you want to. It's just kind of up to you to sort of imbue it with quality and honesty and, you know, and beauty. But, which is a very tall order. But, but, you know, someone like Daniel Johnston, like, when I heard that, I was just, it was like, you know, oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, with a guy like that, too, I mean, it's literally that his music is coming straight from a place that nobody can enter. You know, it's like coming from, you know, for lack of a better term, not to sound cliche or anything, but it's coming from his soul, you know,
like, for sure.
You know, he was a crazy dude. I've seen you play a couple of times live. I saw you when Dinosaur Jr. had kind of reunited and came and played Seattle on the mural stage, I believe it was. And you looked like you were having such a fucking great time up there on stage.
That's good.
And I was so into that. Do you always have a great time playing live?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some struggles, but I mean, especially with Dinosaur Jr., not to say that. I mean, all I'm doing is playing bass.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm practically anonymous. I mean, it just doesn't like
nonsense.
The kids that care about it are like music nerds, like yourself. You know, it's like they understand that, oh, that's a bass and it's making a sound. Otherwise, anyone who goes to see Dinosaur Jr. like, there's that guy flopping and say, who knows what that is, sorry, Bob. Here's the money back to. And you know, I started playing that music with Jay like at a pretty early age. So
yeah, yeah.
It really, you know, it's a. Yeah, it just hits a little, and especially because we overcame all of this incredible negativity too.
Uh-huh,
like,
yeah, like very public.
Like,
negativity.
It was really. I mean, I really carried a real like. I carried a real little chip on my shoulder about that band for a long time.
And yeah. Yeah.
To really be able to shed that and to be able to really express the joy that music always gave me is like, you know, that's the best.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Do you get the same feeling from Sebado?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I mean, Sebado's, it's a little more like it's sort of on my, you know, it's really, that we really, it's a kind of a more fragile situation because we, you know, there's not like this thing that we do. I mean, it's like we really, you know, we kind of, it's, I mean, we're at a particularly strong period right now. Uh-huh. I mean, you know, historically the band is, we've really put ourselves in some pretty
shaky situations.
We put ourselves in some really shaky situations.
Yeah.
And really put ourselves, you know, just really, really challenged ourselves. And so there's, you know, but I mean, you know, yeah, but Sevado's got its, you know, it's got its own thing. And, it's, and, you know, it's something that we've developed for 25 years. So
Sure.
And, you know, it's what we're doing right now is just ridiculously fun and easy. So it's
You know. And how many more dates do you guys have?
We get another week or so and here, and then we have a couple of days off, and then we go to Europe for another almost month. So.
With Thurston?
No. I wish. That would be nice. But now we go to Europe. Yeah. So
you're headlining that section of the tour?
Yeah. I mean, it's we did the first half of this tour by ourselves. So.
Oh, okay.
Or more than half, but we go over there and do our own headlining tour. Small club. I mean, just playing the same little places we always play, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, my girlfriend's coming along and selling T-shirts, which is fucking awesome.
That's great, man. That's great. Are you happy?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had a lot of I got a lot of stuff going on. I mean, there's a lot of people that I gotta.
You're busy.
I'm busy, and I'm learning a lot about stuff that I didn't know about before. Uh-huh. You know, like how to buy a house. I mean, I bought a house before, but I was just like, where do I sign and throw my money? Show somebody to throw my money at. Because, I just, you know. But now it's like, you know, every, you know, you got kids. Every dollar counts. And you know, and I think that was also something that I needed to do in my life was actually really take stock of what I have and really understand stuff.
So
when I say stuff, I mean stuff, anything. I mean, like.
Oh, yeah.
How to fix something, how to apply for a loan, you know, that could, and then that's the kind of stuff that, it can kind of fall by the wayside if you just throw money at things.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me, man. It's an honor and a pleasure to meet you and get to talk with you like this. And, I'm really looking forward to seeing you guys play tonight.
You're welcome. Thanks, man.
Yeah. Thank you. Welcome back. Oh, man. I just listened back to that whole thing. Sorry for if the sound quality is not that great because I forgot to turn up the microphones in the green room on the little thing. And so that's why there's a lot of static in the background because I had to boost the signal here in the studio. Regardless. That was fantastic. Like I said at the end there, it was such an honor to be able to sit down with Lou Barlow and chat with him in that kind of setting. You know, I mean, it's always beneficial if they come to in studio, if the artists and the guests come in studio, because then you have much more time. Nothing is rushed. It's a much more comfortable setting. And you can, you know, you can have a heart to heart, but it felt like, we had a little heart to heart there, right? It took us a little bit to get there, but we achieved it. We achieved it, folks. I hope you really enjoyed it. I just had such a great time talking with them. And I hope you guys have enjoyed the music. Like I said before, you can buy the new album, which we have played. Let's see. What songs do we play there? We played Beat in the middle there, and then we're going to go out today with Oxygen, which you've heard a little part of already. And you can get that new album, Defend Yourself, which came out last year, and it's so, so great, you guys. I can't even begin to tell you how great the rest of the album is. Go to sebado.com. That's S-E-B-A-D, SEBADOH, and check it out for yourself. One thing we forgot to do, I pitched to my Facebook friends on there that, you know, if you had questions for Lou Barlow, and somebody asked, I believe it was listener Brian who asked, what is a sebado? And I forgot to ask that question. It was a great question. So I did not, we did not find out, obviously. Okay. Remember, folks, pledge to sign some of your friends up for the Air Raid podcast. It's real easy just to subscribe in iTunes or Zune or on Stitcher Radio or there on CairoRadio.com. You can subscribe to all those places. Our RSS feed is now fixed, so you can get it on your normal little podcatchers apps on your smart devices. So that's all fixed. And so, you know, there's a number of ways to get the show, guys. Number of ways. Yeah. And, you know, tell a family member about the Air Raid podcast. Who knows? They may really enjoy it. So so do that for us, will you? And you can also find us at on Facebook, on Instagram. Let's see, on Elo. Are you guys on Elo yet? That's kind of floundering, isn't it? That whole service. And of course, on Twitter, at Air Raid Net. And if you're like Derek and you'd like to correct something that I said, please shoot me an email, Aaron, that's A-A-R-O-N, at air-raid.net. Okay, everybody. This is Oxygen off of the album Defend Yourself by Sebado, and we'll be back next week with director of movies and TV, Lynn Shelton. Ah, she's fantastic. You guys are going to love it. She's got a new movie coming out called Laggies with Sam Rockwell and Keira Knightley. Oh my God, man. It is good. It is good. So stay tuned next week for Lynn Shelton. We have a great conversation, let me tell you. She was in studio. It was fantastic. Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week. I won't be-